It's the Mind and Heart Show. For the next hour, it's thoughts and feelings and the way they affect our lives and the world we live in. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470. Now here's your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier.
Good morning, Charlottesville, and welcome to the Mind and Heart Show. I'm your host this morning, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on WPVC 94.7 FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Thank you for joining us. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and our show deals with all matters of the mind and heart. Please join us by visiting our Facebook page, which is Mind and Heart Show. You can leave a comment or a question there. You can send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC or email us at MindHeartWPVC@gmail.com. We welcome all opinions and points of view. The show will be available via podcast later today or tomorrow, and you can go to CVillePodcast.com, C-V-I-L-L-E, podcast.com, that's one word. Just put in Mind and Heart, and the show will come up. And this morning, you can also stream the show online at our website, which is 947wpvc.org. I'm very pleased this morning to welcome my guest this morning, Mr. Dan Grogan. And we are going to be talking about redistricting and the voting process. And my reason for having Dan this morning is because I think this does bear on people's sense of empowerment in the community and whether their voice is being heard. So it's a very important issue, especially as we enter an election season. So I want to welcome Dan and say thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be on board. And Mind and Heart, how perfect, because this is a subject close to my heart. And it's not incredibly difficult, but it does take some mind engagement to chase a lot of aspects down and how widespread this problem of the lack of fair voting districts
indeed
in our fair Old Dominion.
Yes.
And it's a problem that's really bad and getting much worse.
Getting worse, yeah. We look at how many incumbents get reelected. Dan, tell us about your background. Just let our listeners know a little about how you got to this, what your professional life is, what is gerrymandering. Just give us the sort of big overview, if you would.
The big overview. Well, I'm here as a more or less a foot soldier with One Virginia 2021, which is a statewide organization that wants to tackle this issue of what is often called gerrymandering. That's the when it goes off the rails, as it has, but fair voting districts and making your vote count, which is really what it's all about. And got the One Virginia 2021 got started in late 2013 by some civic-minded folks in this area, primarily Lee Middleditch, Mr. Ucrops in Richmond, Shannon Valentine, Lynchburg, and more than a few other very committed folks that said, hey, this really begs our attention, and it's been around. People have heard of gerrymandering, and it's oft explained by Governor Gary of Massachusetts in the election of 1812 and how he redrew the state and the voting districts, and it was deemed to look sort of like a salamander. So they put Governor Gary's name and salamander together, and so it really should be gerrymandering. But so the term is kind of stuck, but it really could be called Virginia mandering because Patrick Henry, most historians agree, was maybe the first to promulgate this thing of drawing a district to benefit an individual or a party, because he redrew, as governor of Virginia, redrew the districts to pit Madison and Monroe, a Federalist running, challenging Madison.
Interesting.
And in that day, the candidates always had to buy the spirits for the voters when they convene and talk about political aspects. So they'd have to pick up the bar tab in those days.
Interesting.
So that's
this has
where
been going on
Virginia,
a long time.
Long time.
Yeah.
And it has quite a sordid history, but it's surprising, Jeff, that most everybody has heard of it, of gerrymandering, but yet realizing how it has gotten so much worse, and the effects of it are visible in so many ways in what we might say is our broken system these days. And if anything, this presidential election, I think, will go down to being the really angry voter in the system in so many ways being broken.
Yeah.
And on my background, yes, I'm sorry, I dropped that ball. I'm pretty much just a foot soldier here, and maybe got impelled into this through, I was a Middle East foreign policy major back in the day, and that sort of tweaked my interest in all things political, and came from somewhat a political family. And my sister's been a state government of Georgia for a long time and state senator. So believe me, I hear stories of how the sausage gets made and concerns and what comes out the other end of the process. So
not pretty always, I guess.
Not so much, right. And I guess a lot of folks would say, you know, I'm not really that. I try to vote when I can. You know, I'm not really into this. And this topic can get kind of wonky and deep in the weeds. And so to simplify it, it really is to break it down a little bit. It's just such a complete conflict of interest that sitting politicians are the ones that draw the districts. It's the party in power after the decennial census every 10 years. And 2010, the Democrats controlled the Virginia Senate. They don't anymore, but they did at the time. So they drew the districts. And the Republicans were in control of the House. And so they drew the House districts.
So we got both parties that are complicit.
Well, and there was pretty much a deal or the fact that it was the houses were split. And so the districts were drawn to promote an individual and the parties drawing them to keep that control. And the obvious outcome of that is hyper-politicization and the it's really, as my grandmother used to say, it's the fox guarding the hen house.
Right.
To have the folks that have the most to gain to be doing it. So
it's just a blatant self-interest in terms of conflict of interest.
And it just sometimes in addressing high school government classes, and I'm sketching this out, and they might say and have, oh, come on, that's got to be illegal. What? You mean? No, the Virginia Constitution only calls for the drawing of districts to be compact and contiguous. There is so little guidelines, and they really don't enforce the compactness. And now, Jeff, as we look over here to the left, we see two particularly egregious examples of districts drawn. One in Northern Virginia by the Democrats, and State Senatorial District 37, it goes from south of Dulles all the way to West Falls Church, and it's a crazy-looking shape that cuts through a lot of communities.
Cuts communities in half.
And it's drawn to, because there's so much political data available now, and that's the difference over the years and why it has gotten so much worse. And so what used to happen with a machete kind of is now happens with a scalpel, one okay. might say.
So they can really, then looking at voting patterns, they can really patch this thing together to maintain that advantage.
And it can be, and the other visual that we're looking at here is that in the House District 72, pretty much wrapping around Richmond, going from the James in an arc around to Bryant Park, that the Republicans drew. And you cannot look at these two districts without knowing there's another motive to doing it. And it's not at all compact. It is contiguous. The only thing you can't have any break in the district. But, of course, when you get down to Northern Neck and around rivers and the bay, it can go across rivers. So you just get in your canoe and go across the Rappahannock. And the district might continue over there. So that is a completely antiquated and a wacky thing.
And there is no way you could argue this is compact. It seems to me that there could be a reasonable court challenge. Maybe there's one going on you can tell us about. But to challenge this notion that these districts are compact.
Yeah, it's just folks that really do this for a living. In fact, I'd like to give a shout out to several other people. I'm operating off some information from Terry Cooper, who is a lifelong Republican and does opposition research. And our group is multipartisan, bipartisan.
Democrats, maybe, Republicans, Libertarians, Green
all
Party,
stripes,
anybody.
All ages, all whatever. It's easy to talk about nonpartisan, but I guess we're all partisan. So multipartisan is a much better description and so Terry's been looking at redistricting trends and all across the country, and has been involved with elections from dog catcher to governors. and as mentioned, Lee Middleditch is a prime mover and has done so much in this Charlottesville area in community building and civic awareness and empowering us. But so most of the folks that know that are really aware of this, Virginia ranks in the top five of gerrymandered states, and our neighbors Maryland and North Carolina are very close in this.
You mean
pretty
much
worst
offenders? Virginia's a serious offender.
Yes, that the lack of fairness in the voting process and how much the system is, well, you just out and out have to say abuse of the system. And Maryland, you look at that district, and it is, you as a clinical psychologist, many folks would say it's a Rorschach of the highest. Other folks would say it looks like somebody threw up on the map and then connect the dots. North Carolina is amazing in how it just wiggles around. And it breaks up communities, and the aspect of similar things that define a community of the economy, the rural, urban, all these things get, you can realize that things, when the topics or the economy is so different that you end up watering down your representative and what issues they would tackle, because clearly it's something that's heavily agrarian. You need to deal with different issues than a college town or a research triangle.
And it certainly must contribute, Dan, to poor turnout at election times. It contributes, I think, if you think about the psychology of it, it contributes to people feeling they don't really have a say in their government. They feel impotent in some ways. I mean, there are far-reaching consequences for we as citizens with these districts where, I'd love to see the correlation between the gerrymandered districts and the incumbents continually being reelected. I bet it's very high, that correlation.
Oh, when you get to the aspect of competitive elections, and again, we'd all like to think that is the way it goes, and I think we all grew up and proud of our electoral systems, and we're quick to compare with other governments or around the world, and we'd use the derisive term banana republics of how elections mean so little. And I think the Carter Commission and the efforts of the Carter Center over the years of monitoring elections around the world, and then we start to look at, well, wait a minute, we're not so, we're hardly above reproach.
Okay.
And so it is so important of the looking at governmental institutions and true democracy that elections, and it's the first thing you do in looking at other governments is look at the transition of power and how smoothly that goes and what's in place. And but bringing it back around to the competitiveness or lack of, in November in Richmond, not one incumbent that ran for office was turned away, not one was voted out.
Whether in the state Senate or the state House of Delegates.
Correct. Of course, there are some that, you know, for health reasons, decide not to run or, quote, spend more time with the family. We've heard that one before. Usually that can sometimes follow an indictment or something.
Right.
But anyway, and in the previous six election cycles, the incumbent success rate was over 95%, six election cycles. Now, if that doesn't beg the question, are we picking the right people right out of the gun, right, you know, from the start? I don't think so.
They're so good, we have to retain them, huh?
I don't think that's what's going on. And our abysmal voting turnout, just over the decades, and I always used to hate to hear that when folks go, you know, it doesn't really make any difference. I don't think I'm going to vote. That's a lot of trouble. And it's really not going to make any difference. And you think, wow. But there's a side of this where with this lack of competitive races, that it's a rigged system in so many ways. And Virginia's not alone. You can look at those incumbent reelection numbers. In fact, the Washington Post, right after our November election, said the Virginia is running a incumbent protection racket.
Wow.
And that really gets at it, little shades of organized crime and nefarious intent. But it's hard to, I think it would be very obvious of ways that you could increase competition, but you can't really prove the outcome. But I think in the last election, most would say of the races in Virginia that maybe only eight districts were really competitive. Sometimes there'd be an opponent, but it would almost be a write-in kind of challenger. So, but serious competitive elections were few and far between. So when you see that kind of numbers, I mean, I often pose, if this were a sporting event, which elections often get covered in that way, if it was a sporting event, you know, would you really tune in to watch an NCAA tournament if the favored teams were going to win at 97% of the time? You know, your ratings would fall through the floor. So,
but the other thing is how it contributes to this so-called gridlock. I mean, if I've got a completely safe seat and I'm not really accountable at home, I can vote as far extreme in one direction or the other as I choose because I know I'm pretty safe. I mean, it doesn't lend itself, does it, Dan, to working across the aisle with each other.
The spirit of compromise takes it on the chin, as it were, because it in drawing the districts to exclude voters that would not tend to vote for you and looking for your partisan, it means you always need to pay extra attention to your base and not the spectrum of voters. And the dynamic, I guess, many would agree, was played out with Eric Cantor in Ashland, north of Richmond, who, as a Republican, that was probably, what, second in line to Boehner?
Right.
And was, you know, a mover with all kinds of influence and a bright future. And his district was so drawn in such a partisan fashion that he got outvoted from the right by the two professors at Randolph-Macon.
Right.
And so now Dave Bratt is in that seat, but it's in that category of sort of unintended consequences. I think that his was drawn into so much, and yet another case, we like to say it's politicians are picking their voters instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
And when you think of it with that paradigm shift, it really starts to like, whoa, what are we doing, and how do we get to this point? So establishing the depth of the problem or the really blatant conflict of interest that's kind of the easy part. And then you shift over to thinking about, well, what's the remedy? How do we fix this thing? Good gosh. And that's where it gets a little gnarly, and there are a lot of options and different election, just as we're hearing now about superdelegates, and what does that mean? All these different variations state to state. Is this a portion delegate count or winner take all? Every state has so many intricacies that it really is hard to track.
But hold that thought, and we'll get back to that. We're going to take a short break here. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on 94.7 FM, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This is your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Dan Grogan in just a minute, so please stay with us. So if you're just joining us, my guest this morning is Dan Grogan. We're talking about gerrymandering and redistricting and the implications of that for each of us as citizens and our having some say in the political process. So, Dan, you were just talking a little bit before the break about some of the implications of this, and maybe we could pick it up there in terms of some of the cases that you started to cite, the one in Richmond or Eric Cantor's district and so forth.
Well, there's the aspect that I feel strongly about and often gets overlooked is the splitting districts,
okay,
splitting communities, towns, areas, even down to subdivisions. And that trend, there were deemed 100 in the 2000 census, and the 2001 redraw, there were 105 towns, communities split. Districts.
Golly.
And that number went from 105 10 years later to the 2011 to 244 towns, communities that are split because of giving advantage to the party that's drawing. And so Charlottesville always had one delegate. Now
right.
We have four. Strangely, the district that runs to the west of Charlottesville, that comes right up to St. Anne's School and goes all the way to West Virginia.
Good gosh.
And that's held by Steve Landis from Weir's Cave.
And he's been in that seat forever, I believe.
Steve is a Stantonian and has been in for quite a while. And
so he actually represents parts of western Albemarle County.
It comes right up, you know, this
right
side of
town.
Ivy,
yeah.
Right, and then stretches all the way, you know, across the mountain that jogs north, and then all the way to West Virginia. So it's this crazy, by splitting districts, and it makes it, again, the economic concerns, the types of industry, agriculture, all the issues.
Yeah, what does Charlottesville have in common with Bath County necessarily, a very rural county?
It would make you wonder. And in this crazy drawing, again, how specific it can be, as if with Scapel, is after the 2010, the 2011 draw. So when the Democrats, case in point here, the same subject of actually drawing out opponents that were challenging your party, the Democrats redrew in the Fredericksburg area because they knew Bryce Reeves was going to be running, and they redrew the district to cut out the house of Bryce Reeves and go into that subdivision. What they overlooked in doing so was didn't check about junior and senior.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
they drew out his father's out of the district and thought they had the problem solved because he was on the Board of Supervisors and was going to be running, which he did, and he is now my senator. So my senator is from Fredericksburg, and I'm just close to Albemarle High School. And so they kind of screwed up in excluding and drawing him out. The Republicans, on the other hand, longstanding legislator Ward Armstrong, and they did drew him out of his own district, so he would either have to move or hang it up, which he did after multi-decades and leadership role for the Democratic Party, and he was redrawn out. So without the first vote being cast, he was retired.
He was beaten, yeah.
Not even beaten, just...
retired, huh? Just pushed out the door.
And, you know, so often it's like, well, why should I really care about this? I mean, come on. Isn't this just making a lot out of nothing? And I'd like to quote A.E. Dick Howard, who is a longstanding constitutional law professor and practitioner at the University of Virginia Law School. And Dick said, if the mandate of one person, one vote was the generational issue of the 60s, then eliminating political gerrymandering may be the issue of our time. That in December 13.
Wow.
And it's huge. I mean, that's like the cornerstone of our democracy is to think of, you know, one man, one vote, one person, one vote. And how this so dilutes that with this rigged system or finger on the scales, it's just awful. And it said, I think it's, again, in contrasting with some other governments, that the turnover in the Politburo in Moscow is far greater than many of our state legislators now.
Golly, that's a scary
thought. Egad. So,
yeah.
We have a... of course, driving some interest to our website, One Virginia, both spelled out, 2021.org. Why the 2021? Because that's the next time that any progress could be made, because that's the next draw of the 2020 census. So this is a long game that we're engaged with to make change. And again, showing the blatant conflict of interest and how wrong it is not the hard part. It is looking at the remedies.
Yeah.
And that's where it can be convoluted. The gold standard of a remedy would be a constitutional amendment. That's difficult. That's incredibly difficult and designed to be such. It really is a long slog.
You're talking there about the Virginia Constitution.
Virginia Constitution, because all this election stuff is really state-based. I mean, if we all, you would think it would make a lot more sense to have this codified and done nationally, but states' rights is a part of our past and is forever part of the picture. So our organization is working on three fronts to kind of educate, agitate, which is, you know, widespread and reaching out to groups and printed material, and even March 1st on the primary elections, we were out much stronger in Central Virginia, but at the polls and handed out information, seeing what people thought about this, and saying, hey, let's talk about it to your friends, suggest a group that we have a nascent speakers bureau to get out to different places. So if you've got some like-minded folks or even not like-minded and a spirited thing and want to talk about the public realm and the future and the legacy that we're handing off to our kids, this would be quite an issue to do good in the neighborhood and make some changes here, because it's just startling when you dig into it.
Yeah. So Dan, what are the obstacles here? I mean, is it the self-interest and the entrenched parties? I mean, is that what we're bumping up against when we talk about trying to fix this problem?
We know Virginia tradition is a longstanding thing. Well, it's always been done that way. Well, it's the Virginia way. But really, Virginians deserve better in so many ways here. it is, and more than a few studies, this is one of the most non-multi-bipartisan issue that tests has the highest resonance among in surveys, that this needs attention, needs to be changed, cutting across age, income, socioeconomic, everything. But the folks that control many aspects of the change are the ones that have the most to gain. So again, hearkening to my sister, a state senator in Georgia, of, you know, how hard this is. It's very similar, I'd like to say, with thinking about term limits, because who's going to make those votes? Or the base closings that we went through widespread when the military, when our government nationally said we got to close some bases. How do you do that? Everybody's going to want to keep their base.
Sure.
So they did it with independent commissions. And they did a structure whereby it was an up or down vote. You can't keep saying, oh, close your base, but don't mess with my base.
Yeah.
And so it has to be an independent commission. And that's where we think the greatest the progress in five states that I'm aware of is where that has the greatest progress has been, establishing these independent commissions. And there are different ways you can do it. It's But mainly is saying no sitting politician, their families, their staff, could be on this redrawing commission.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they've has been court appointed special masters or demographers, oftentimes out of the state, to come in and do what should have been done right the first time. And when you get to, One Virginia 2021, in addition to education, is in making, putting pressure on folks running, challengers running for office, to say, put this in your platform.
Yeah.
You know, get on board. We'll support you. And Kasich from Ohio is the only presidential candidate that has come out strongly in favor of this.
Interesting.
So, again, on the national scene. But so we're – and then leaning in, putting some pressure on sitting politicians to do the right thing here. And because in many ways they – we know they want to. I mean, you look back at the women's suffrage and – how was it that men finally said, wait a minute, this is the right thing to do? And the 100 years ago, what was going on right now in the suffragette movement was startling. Demonstrations in front of the White House, women imprisoned, and they were taken to what became Lorton and were just treated terribly. All the convictions were thrown out. And the arrests were bad, but I mean, it was awful.
Yeah.
It was particularly well-to-do women that were beaten and starved and all kinds of stuff. But so luckily, we're not in that level of conflict. But our other arm of action is litigation, and we filed suit against the drawers of both Democrats and Republicans of certain districts. Because they are not compact, and they in many times they're the sizes of the districts, they're supposed to be roughly equivalent, and that often isn't the result of that. So that's another level of challenge to it, and in aspects of racial disparity, the Department of Justice gets involved with that, and there's the case of Bobby Scott's district that roughly parallels Interstate 64 from Richmond to Tidewater. And so not only are you drawing districts to choose your partisans, but many times you lump your – draw a district to lump challengers or –
put them
not
together,
like
you
minded.
Mean. So,
yeah, so they would be, you go ahead and, in essence, write off a district so it makes the adjacent districts stronger and more challenge proof.
Okay.
And so that's what the contention is about Bobby Scott's district and the that is under adjudication now and appeal. So who pays for this is a lot of times fiscal conservatives want to know and special interest in looking at the.
You mean who pays for the who process pays for of the redrawing process the districts?
Or drawing them in the first place.
Drawing them in the
first
place.
We pay because it's in the official duties. We pay for the party in power in each house to go out and they hire specialists that go around and they get certain criteria as to how to draw. And they get political information and go in and come up with these
with sophisticated crazily
sophisticated tools
and software, I'm sure, now compared to 50 years ago.
And they'll draw these districts. So we're paying for that. And then later, you know, a few years down the pike, when it gets challenged from whatever grounds, we, the people, end up paying what is easily millions to challenge and break this down as to how it came to pass. So we pay on both ends of it when
yeah.
it doesn't, it would, you know, this used to be pretty much a clerical thing to draw districts. And the whole idea was people move and shifts and as following the economy and westward movement or urbanization. And it was strictly a thing to improve fairness, and now it has gone completely to the other extreme. So, in fact, there's in the latest news of our organization, again, multi-partisan, but filing suit against Democrats and Republicans. But in one case of filing against the Democrats that drew the Senate districts. We have asked that there be in discovery all the communications between the, I believe it was six Democratic senators are involved, all their directives to the folks that drew the districts. And the contention there is, oh, this is privileged lawmaker privileged material. But evidently the law calls for that to be among legislators, not communications or with third parties. So that's the point of that challenge.
Okay.
And so what has happened is the judge said, you know, you have to produce all the communications written and about what your instructions were for drawing these districts in the first place. They have said they would not provide it because it's privileged. Judge said, no, this is with an outside third party. Therefore, just, I think it was Wednesday, they were found in contempt of court. Wow. And those six, I believe it's six, seven, eight, senators are being assessed $100 a day each.
For not
producing what the court has asked for. So,
well, that's interesting.
And again,
hit him in the pocketbook.
You got to say what are you hiding? Why would that not be? Southwest Airlines might say transparency.
Yes.
Transparency. Why not be upfront about this? Is our, you know, our process? We the people.
You work for us.
So it ends up kind of going down the. Seems like going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So we do have a petition online about, and it's not Virginia. I think it's an important distinction. Virginia is not a citizen initiative state like California. We hear about all the propositions.
Right.
And in Virginia, we cannot by petition putting something on the ballot simply because we have enough signers. So this is truly not a, it's more or less a citizen interest list, but we'll call it a petition. And we have about 14, I think the number is around 14,000 folks that say, we're aware of this issue. We want change in this by whatever means possible. And we've, the organization has set it up so that when you sign the petition, Jeff, your senator and delegate would get notified that, hey, I'm out here, I'm listening, I'm watching. And that's the first step, is to raise this level of awareness and lean in, put some heat on it. And
yeah,
a case study of that, and we've mentioned the district that runs from just west of Charlottesville all the way to the West Virginia border, held longstanding by Steve Landis. And I've known Steve for a long time, and our group went to Steve when his vote was critical a year ago session to stop our some bills that were going to improve the drawing process. And his vote killed it. Was the final vote that killed it. We went to Steve and said, you know, we're not going away. We're a statewide group. We've got boards of six regional interest groups and boards, and we're going hard after this. And we think you'd like to do the right thing here. And this wave is not going away. You can get in front of it, or you might be under it, but please. And much to his credit, Steve's a survivor, smart guy, and he's seen a lot go down in Richmond over the years. I think he's been in, it's got to be 20
years,
20, easily. 25. And so he sat down with our people, and we looked at different wording and different experiences, and he feels strongly that it needs to be, you know, it's called for that it's under the auspices of the party in power in each house, but that could only be as a final stamp of approval. And much to his credit, he was a co-sponsor of a bill this year among, I think it was, four other bills in the House. And they had different degrees of remedy, but they were all dealing with gerrymandering. Are we coming up on a break?
Yes, we're coming up on a break. So if you just joined me, my guest this morning is Dan Grogan. We're talking about gerrymandering and the process and the impact on we individual citizens. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7 FM, and we're here every Saturday morning. And we'll be right back after a short break, so please stay with us. So we're coming to our last segment in what has been a really enlightening discussion with Dan Grogan about One Virginia 2021. If you have just joined us, you can listen to the show on cvillepodcast.com. It's probably beginning tomorrow, Monday at the latest, and the whole show will be available. Go to cvillepodcast.com and just put Mind and Heart in the search box, and our shows will come up. You can also stream us online at 947wpbc.org. So that's another way you can hear us. So let's get back to our final segment with Dan. And I wanted to ask you, Dan, about are certain income or racial groups more adversely affected by gerrymandering, or is it sort of cut across all incomes and racial groups?
Jeff, that's... I don't know if I want to jump into that thicket because, okay. It affects everybody, and the case could be made that in some regions that due to the draw, it certainly can have inordinate effect on certain cohorts financially, racially. But again, on the racial front, that the Department of Justice, I don't know how their thresholds, but that gets attention much quicker than some other inequities, and thank goodness for it. But you know, Virginia's history in voting, and you think of the awful days of poll tax or the literacy tests, and you had to recite certain
you had to memorize the Constitution, practically.
And do it without a note, and just all the insidious ways. And now we're seeing what's happening to challenge some erosion of the voting rights, and there's poor folks in Arizona waiting 5 hours to vote because they closed more than half of the precincts. But I mean, that's just the polling places, and it like, oh, gee, you think that'd be a problem?
We don't want to get into the discussion of all those hurdles they're putting in place to vote, because that's a separate topic. But yeah,
but we were talking about the what just happened at the session in Richmond just concluding, And again, every session, you start over again with the process, you know, every year. So, but in this year, and we were talking about Delegate Steve Landis, and it was co-sponsoring a bill, one of, I think it was five that were before the House, all dealing with different degrees of making progress on district drawing. And so what happened to that when the day it came up in elections and the elections committee, privileges and elections, P&E, yes, is since there were five bills that were on the same subject but wildly different in their impact, the committee chair lumped them as one and said, let's have an up or down voice vote on all five, which no one had expected this procedural. And so in an instant, these five bills in committee got quashed on a voice vote. Why a voice vote, you might ask? Because a voice vote is as if it never happened. There's no record taking, no accountability, and poof. So
we don't even know who voted yay and who voted nay.
Yeah, and I know some people that were in the room. And so we didn't expect that at all, but so they went away. They fared better in the Senate, and at least two bills were voted, got out of the Senate, voted, and went to the crossover where they consider bills to go to the House, and then they too got expunged. And so it's a, you know, once again, we have every right to ask for some accountability. It shouldn't be on voice vote. And but there was a lot of progress made. And so hope springs eternal. And there's some new legislation lining up for the next term. And of course, with the presidential election, the voter turnout, it will certainly go up. One Virginia will be out on election day. So be kind to your leafleteer as you come out of voting, which is where we find it's a lot better to approach people. And we have to lean in and get some accountability and say, this is our system. And this is really at the crux of the problem and our gridlock and this hyper-partisanship. And there's not like anything that's complicated. There's not any one silver bullet that will fix everything. Much attention rightfully paid to Citizens United and how the role of money is huge. But this unfair and non-compact and using political data. So we're committed to seeking independent commission to draw the districts and spelling out procedures to how these districts are drawn more than just compact contiguous.
Okay.
Respecting existing political boundaries. I think there were four polls in Charlottesville, let's say, four different precincts, where you went in and depending on where you lived in that precinct, you were handed a ballot, this ballot or that ballot, or you go to this table or that table, which makes it confusing for the certainly confusing for the poll workers, and I've done that before, added expense, just crazy. So how to get to that independent commission, it could be, you know, you'd be better off getting the dog catcher to draw these districts rather than those that have the most to gain. So you could have retired judges, auditors, folks that are in government that are pledged to being to carrying out their duties in a nonpartisan fashion. You could have the, you know, each party would pick two non-sitting politicians, and Jeff, it's so bad that anything would be progress.
Right.
Here.
Oh, I hear that.
Again, the gold standard would be the constitutional amendment that is a really high bar.
And takes some time, doesn't it? A couple sessions, and there's all kinds of hoops to jump through.
Yes, it's designed to pretty much you know, hog tie you because, and I think there is a movement in 17, there must be some other forces lining up for a possible constitutional amendment. And our own Larry Sabato has mentioned a lot of things that could and should be addressed, and that there's plenty of proof that the framers wanted a dynamic system where we respond to the exigencies of modernism and change. All this stuff in court cases get decided. What would they do about cyber stuff?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, what did the framers think about that?
But yeah, it's changed
anyway,
everything
so,
because of the specificity.
So you having delegates, you know, every 2 years is just crazy. You're right back in for the re-election on day one, and the whole roll of money.
Yeah.
So, but there's some very real, most recent advances in Ohio where it got to an independent draw in this last election. And it was it was the same election. You might have heard about it because marijuana was on the ballot that was turned down. Most would agree, not because of the topic of it, but it was because it was a state granted monopoly for certain marijuana growers who who lobbied the state heavily. And a lot of folks could agree with the issue, but not on a state operated or state mandated monopoly of a certain industry, which was absurd. So the court stepped in Arizona last June, went to the Supremes, and I think it was the same day that gay marriage came out. So it got backwinded in much of the celebration, hoopla, and to some the disdain of the finding for gay marriage was in a proposition-driven state, citizen proposition, folks of Arizona went in and said, we don't want you drawing the districts anymore. Got on the ballot. It got passed. The legislature filed suit, said, no, we're charged with drawing these districts. And the Supremes said, no, they went through the proper channels. You know, it must be done by an independent thing, as was passed. And so the court held.
Wow.
And, so there are
a little bit of good news along the way.
It is, but to think that five states, you know, have really made, in addition, Montana and Iowa, and California, and were out front on this, and it can be done. And the recent Ohio experience is real heartening.
Yeah, it's exciting. We've just got a minute or two, Dan, and as often happens, we didn't cover nearly all that I hoped we would this morning. Remind everyone that you can hear the entire interview with Dan Grogan on cvillepodcast.com, so please do that if you missed part of the show. Dan, tell us, if you could, how folks can get involved. I mean, what's a mechanism? You gave the website. Maybe we'll give that again. But how can folks help if they want to get involved with this particular cause?
Well, we'd love to hear from folks of all stripes, ages, and interest levels. Is One Virginia written out 2021.org. We'll have a presence at a number of public things, Fridays after 5 and some gatherings. And we'll be planning a strong turnout on Election Day to get out for folks. In many ways, maybe that's preaching to the choir that folks are already voting. But again, this turnout will be higher for the presidential voting. Seek it out in ways and whatever you read and we'd be glad to come talk to groups about, you know, what we can do to get some movement on this because, again, as my granny would say, that dog don't hunt.
Right.
And our process is broken in ways that are just, when you dig into it, you just shake your head and going, how can this be?
How could this
happen? Virginians deserve better. Yeah. Can we leave it at that, Jeff? And I sure appreciate the opportunity to spread the word here.
Great, Dan. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and what was a fascinating discussion. Again, you can hear the entire discussion if you just joined us at SeavillePodcast.com. This is Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, your host at the Mind and Heart Show. We'll be back next Saturday, so please join us then. And follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll talk to you next week. So have a great week and stay safe. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. Be sure and tune in again next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Mind and Heart Show, only on WPVC-LP, Charlottesville.